Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to a Cross Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hello and happy Friday. I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry.
One of our episodes this week was on Ellen Sweller Richards. And as I said at the end of the episode, I wish there had not been so much eugenics in there. And I have a hard time sometimes articulating just how mainstream those ideas were. Like, there were textbooks, your regular high school textbook, that just laid out eugenics as though it was accepted fact. And like a lot of the same groups that the movement targeted as inferior also adopted those same ideas for their own improvement. Like, no group is a monolith. There were, of course, people in every group that were like, this is maybe not the best plan. But it was just everywhere. And so there are so many people that you will research, especially at the end of the 19th and early 20th century, and you'll be like, this person was really cool. Oh, no, eugenics. And so much about euthenics was also like all about preserving clean water and clean air and having adequate ventilation in indoor spaces, which sure has revealed itself to be incredibly important over the last years of a pandemic. But then also, like, there's just a thread of, like, and we're going to improve the race with this. And I was like, what if we didn't, though?
Right. I mean, it's interesting because, as you said, it was very accepted. But I think what we don't often acknowledge is that it was also lauded for how smart and, like, progressive it was.
Yeah.
So I always think of things like that when we tackle stuff today and we're like, this is the new ideology that's going. I'm like, will it be this way forever, though?
Well, and the most horrific parts of the eugenics movement were after she had died.
Yeah.
So, like, I think that, like, there were some like sterilization programs that I think did start before she died. But it was really after she had died that, like, that became widespread. And then obviously, like, the whole Nazi race science and eugenics program was after her death by a lot. But those core ideas that, like, there are people who deserve to have children and other people who shouldn't have children. Like, it's just, we could have instead spent so much time recognizing that humanity has, like, we all have innate worth.
Right.
and maybe instead of thinking about, like, which people should be having children and which people should not have children, like, instead we could have been spending all of that time and energy talking about how to make society accessible and welcoming to everybody. But, like, that
Oh, Tracy, that's nonsense. I know.
And like the same ideas about like encouraging the right people, like that they still come up today. Like I remember there just being a big furor maybe 20 years ago that was about how the educated people aren't having enough children. And I was just like, this is eugenics. Like,
right.
It's eugenics again.
Right. I mean, that gets said all the time.
Yeah.
Still, yeah. That's ongoing.
Yeah.
I don't know how to help those people.
No.
I did chuckle to myself when we talked about her early learnings in maintaining an efficient, orderly, and well-kept home. I'm like, what's that like? I don't know.
Yeah, as I was sort of thinking when I first lived in my own apartment, I kept it very clean, and I would start Saturday morning. I had like a cleaning ritual that I would clean the rooms of my apartment, but I was also living by myself in it was like technically a two-bedroom apartment, but I used one bedroom as the bedroom and the other bedroom was like a home office computer room type space. And I mostly, the thing, I just didn't have a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I was living on my own for the first time, and I had like furniture that had come out of my parents' basement, or which some generous neighbors sold to me for very cheap. And I like that there just were not a lot of possessions in my home. And now, you know, 27 years have passed and there's just all this stuff everywhere.
Yeah, we have piles and we collect a lot of stuff. So our house is like a crazy fun house all the time.
You described your house to me one time when we had just met as if Sanford and Son were really creative.
That's sort of accurate. I mean, we've been really making like a more progressive approach over the years to like, okay, but how do we tame this? And for me, I've realized like I tend to have a very all or nothing approach,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't work. Right. Like you can't because
sure.
Then things will like get set up. And the second they get a little askew, I'm like, well, that didn't work. I don't know.
It's ruined.
Right now I am in the middle of a fairly significant closet overhaul, which anyone who knows me knows that's a lot. Where I'm trying to cull the collection because I have a lot of clothes. I mean, I have clothes I've had since I was 13.
Sure.
And some of them I will keep. But others I'm like, I got this t-shirt at like a 5K that I dropped into like day before. I don't need this shirt. Why do I have this shirt? But it's, I have realized though that if I am a little more generous with myself and go, listen, just do a little bit each day. You're fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually way easier to just maintain things than if I were being quite so stringent and like, no, you must do everything and overhaul the whole. I'm like, all right, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that was one of the other things about that first apartment is that I moved in a process that took like a couple trips with a pickup truck. And the reason it took more than one trip was because my parents let me take my old bedroom furniture from my childhood bedroom. And so like, we didn't rent a U-Haul or anything. Took a couple trips in the pickup to do it.
Yeah.
So that meant that like once I was unpacked, everything was clean and it was easy to like keep it clean. Even with three cats in that apartment, it was able to pretty much keep it clean. Something that we didn't get into in this episode, because we have gotten into it in other episodes about home economics as a field, is that there's kind of multiple ways to look at it in terms of the effect that it had on women. Because home economics programs made a college education a lot more accessible to a lot more women, especially women whose families would have objected to their idea of going to college.
Right.
But since they were going to college to study home economics, like it was more acceptable. But also there are arguments that home economics as a field, like further focused women's lives on the domestic field.
Right.
Like on the sphere of homemaking and child rearing and things like that. And like, we didn't get into that as much in this episode, both because we had talked about it, in episodes that are still fairly new compared to the whole archive, but then also because like this was toward the end of her career, when she had spent so much of her time focused on education for women outside of that sphere of home economics. Like, I loved the part about her becoming head of the science section for correspondence courses to make it possible for all kinds of people to study that they would not have had otherwise.
Yeah, I love that.
It also reminded me a bit of when we did the interview about Sears.
Yeah.
And talked about how mail order opened up like consumer purchasing to people who had been discriminated against in stores.
Yeah, that's still probably the most mind-blowing moment I've ever had on this show.
Yeah.
Because I just never thought about it until Jerry said, like, no, that's why that's why Sears was so popular with Black customers for so long.
Yeah.
Because it was the one place they knew that, like, they could go for mail order and not have to deal with being stared at or treated as though they were unworthy or going to do something wrong in the store. And I was like, oh my goodness, that is obviously my privileged white perspective never took that into account. Makes all the sense on earth.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I keep picking people to talk about on the show that turn out to be complicated.
Well, because that's what humans are.
Yeah, and I knew there was going to be complications with Ellen Sweller Richards because I already knew, like, how much of the home economics movement was connected to eugenics and other issues. But, yeah, part of me wanted to take a little field trip over to her house in Jamaica Plain, but I'm pretty sure it's just somebody's private residence now, and that felt creepy.
Hi.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We talked about the frustrating story of Eliza Fenning this week.
We did.
On a lighter note, because I always like to talk about food. What is chicken and dumplings to you? Or what do you call dumplings?
Okay. Well, I call dumplings two different things.
Okay.
There are dumplings that are a shell made of dough that is stuffed with something and is steamed or fried.
Right. More in the Asian cuisine.
Yeah. Dumplings are also
more
like a biscuity type thing that is like topped onto like chicken and dumplings is like chicken and also like things like peas and carrots and onions and stuff like that, and also a broth. And then these things that are more like a doughy, maybe biscuity is not like little, like, but portions of dough put on top of that. And then it all goes into the oven so that it's sort of simultaneously poached in the liquid and maybe baked a little bit on the top. When my mom would make chicken and dumplings when I was a kid, the dumpling parts, I think, were always like totally submerged in the liquid during the cooking. And they were doughier and not as delicious to me as when my husband does it, and they go on top, not exactly like a crust, but kind of. I feel like this is a very long-winded description.
No,
now,
this
but
is
like,
all, I want all of this.
It's when it gets to be really cold weather, I'm often like, when are we having chicken and dumplings?
What if you made chicken and dumplings tonight? Growing up, I think my mom made up what chicken and dumplings were.
Okay.
Because she would do them like in the pan, and she would make like a very biscuity dough, and the same pan that she had fried chicken in, she would just drop that dough in with them towards the end and let them puff up. And you got these nice like buttery, had some chicken grease in them, like biscuits essentially.
That sounds really good and
delicious.
Also, unlike anything
else I've ever had.
Described as dumpling.
Unlike anything I've ever seen anybody else do. But that's what I grew up with. And then we moved to the South, and I remember being at a restaurant and seeing chicken and dumplings on the menu, and I ordered it. And when it came and it was like submerged dumplings in what appeared to be a soupy stew, I was just like, what is this glop?
Like? Yeah. 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 When Patrick does it, it's like occasionally they come out heavy, which is the term that's used in here with the dumplings that were allegedly poisoned. Like when something has gone not quite right in the mixing process, occasionally right. They will come out in a way that we both describe as too heavy. But I find them to be really delicious because they have like that more doughy, almost poached texture, but there's often like a more biscuity, crispy top layer to it.
Delicious.
I find it very, very yummy. And maybe I'm going to text him right now and say, when are we having chicken and dumplings?
Yeah, there's, you know, if the yeast doesn't interact properly with the gluten or any of the sugars in it, like it will get really heavy. They won't puff up and be beautiful. And there was a point where Eliza mentioned during one of her statements that the yeast kind of left this weird red residue, which she thought was poison. But I think like your yeast was just not active anymore.
Yeah.
The other thing that gets me, let me tell you about the villain in this story in my book, because it is Charlotte Turner.
Yeah.
I don't think Charlotte Turner did the poisoning. Uh-huh. I think Robert did it, but I think Charlotte covered it up for him and was also a witch because it's like she, there's a whole thing that I didn't include here where she just like hovered over Eliza, who was a cook. She had been cooking professionally for like years at this point. Whereas Charlotte was not, and she was like a newlywed wife, hovering over her, telling her how to do every step.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I know you're technically the boss, but get out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was actually Charlotte that insisted that milk went into the sauce because Eliza was like, I'm not making that. We're doing like a gravy kind of sauce. And she's like, no, milk in the sauce. And so I'm like, suspicious. I make the Simpsons right. dog suspicious eye face. Allegedly, the doctor, John Marshall, did get John Joseph Hume, who was developing ways to test for arsenic, involved. Mm-hmm. And he did, in his test, determine that it was arsenic, although it seemed like John Marshall kind of like got there before he had done any of the testing. Like he was kind of looking to support his assumed thesis instead of really doing the like,
sure.
the scientific method where you try to prove it by disproving it, essentially. But yeah, that's a little bit weird. John Marshall also wrote a pamphlet after Eliza had been executed that is essentially a smear campaign against her.
Mm.
It's completely opposite to the way most accounts and recordings of things she has said and her letters and like the way that press reporters found her. He makes her sound like this really bratty shrew who just barks at everybody. And it's like so discordant to every other account we have of her behavior and her temperament that it's like, dude, no.
Yeah. I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in exactly. to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, right. which is different than empathy, yeah. right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already yeah. see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I haven't even gotten to the gross part.
Okay.
Which is Sylvester, the judge. Because he was known as a hanging judge.
Yeah.
He just loved to prosecute people.
There were a lot of those in Britain during this era.
Yes, for sure. And he also had a really horrible reputation for demanding sexual favors of women who came to him for help. And I'm just like, you are the grossest of gross, yeah. gross.
Yeah. We've had a couple of episodes before when we've talked about how the justice system worked in Britain over the 18th and 19th centuries and other periods too. But like we've talked about several things that have been related to like how often it really was just stacked against whoever was the defendant. There was just a presumption that this was rubber stamping the fact that the person who had been accused was guilty. And this was maybe 50 years or so prior to this was when we talked about women being transported to Australia to try to offset the gender imbalance in the convicted men that were being transported to Australia, and like how many people were being transported for just incredibly minor alleged offenses, like stealing somebody's underwear off the clothesline, like that kind of stuff. So this is a way bigger case because it's like possibly an attempted murder.
Right.
But like I saw just a lot of the same traits in the way that the trial played out.
Yeah. There is also a detail that comes up in the most scant mentions, isn't focused on, at least in none of the documents or information that was available to me, that Charlotte Turner was apparently pregnant when all of this happened.
Mm.
And it didn't impact her pregnancy negatively.
Huh.
To the best of our knowledge, but like you would think that would be a huge focus, right?
Right.
Like she tried to poison a pregnant woman, but it never seems to come up. Huh. Or it was just not recorded properly in court documents, because that is also a thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was very common.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't getting everything word, for sure. And there were mentions in some, I read a couple of different books that talked about this trial, and there is like an acknowledgement that eventually, like between arraignment and like the Old Bailey trial that people would have, eventually those documents would carry over, like the statements from the arraignment would make their way to the trial, but that wasn't always happening at this point. So it was a lot harder to catch inconsistencies, a lot harder to have a basis to go off of on other records to like prompt questions. So weird.
One of the other things that came up for me as we were recording this, like it's clear that some of the things that were done to determine whether there was arsenic present were specious at best. And like that's not over. There continue to be all kinds of like forensic methods that have been used to convict people and in some cases execute people that turn out to just not hold up at all. Like, I remember a whole case where a man had been convicted of arson in a fire that killed his children. And there were all these things about the burn patterns on the floor that the prosecution was like, this is evidence that there was an accelerant dripped in all these places. And then they did, the fire department later did like a training burn of the house next door, with part of the purpose being seeing if the same thing held up when they knew for sure what was used in the house. And it was like the exact same burn patterns were present when no accelerant had been used. And it's like, there just keep being things like that coming up where a lot of things that have been sort of accepted as evidence work out to be like, oh, that's not actually how that works.
Right. Yes. There is some interesting speculation that was going on at the time and has been expounded upon by some other writers right up through, you know, modern writing, that this whole thing was actually kind of intended to send a message to the servant class.
Uh-huh.
Like at a time when there was starting to be some mobility going on of like, stay in your place.
Right.
Don't sass because we can literally have you killed.
Yeah.
Which is terrifying. And I also wonder, though, too, there's this whole other tertiary thing that I found myself thinking about while I was making dinner last night of, we've talked about it many times on the show before, people can convince themselves of things that are not true or real.
Sure.
And so I really do, part of me also wonders if this is not a case where, like, Orlebar introduced the idea of, like, I think we were all poisoned, and then they're all like, Eliza must have poisoned us, and then they're just backing that up in their head without even really consciously doing so, where they're like, it does all make sense, this is the only possible thing, and it's like, well, you've just literally condemned a person because you mm-hmm. got spun up on an idea that someone introduced. There was also a something that was pointed out in some of the writings of the day that made me very, very sad, which is that, you know, Eliza's father had been a soldier that served with honor for the military, for the government. And like, he had no, like, no one seemed to care about any of that or respect any of that as mm-hmm. he was fighting to, like, save his daughter, to pay for his daughter's body, et cetera. It's just like a weird, you know, that kind of thing where people treat other humans as, like, disposable, even if they have been very integral to something they have done. It's frustrating. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm in a very murdery space in my research lately, so there might be more things like this. This was, in case anyone is curious, a case that came up when we were breaking the first season of Criminalia, and we were like, no, she's not actually a lady poisoner, I don't think, so we can't include her. But I really, really was intrigued by her story, which is why we are here. just cross-pollinating. It works out great. If this is your weekend coming up, I hope that nothing horrible happens to you or by you, and that you have a restful time and you take care of yourself and others as much as is possible. And if you don't have time off, I hope that you still manage to carve out a little space for yourself to eat something delicious and wholesome that has nothing tainted in it whatsoever. And just to rest and relax and rejuvenate your mind, body, and spirit. We will be right back here tomorrow with a classic episode. And then on Monday, there'll be another new one.
Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.